good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, January 22nd, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
TGIF, Melody.
Yes, it is. And thanks again for sitting in with Pastor Butch. He is to be returning on Monday. Got a note from him this morning. Can I come to work on Monday? No. I was like, well, of course you can. Of course you can. You didn't have to ask. And he's going to give it a shot. Don't know if how he'll be feeling by Monday and so forth. But he said he'd like to try. So, but again, thank you for joining, filling in, Dave. And let's go ahead and get started with the market report. We had a really big hit on gold this morning. It did come back quite a bit, but we're still looking down $17 at $1,854. Silver was down 50 cents today at $25.50. Platinum was down 27 at $1,102. Palladium was down 6 at $2,392. The USDX was up 0.12 at 90.22. Crude oil was down 99 cents at 52.14. And let's see. Paper markets. Let's get to the paper markets. You know, the Dow was down, you know, almost 300 points today. And it came back to about 100 points. And then it traded between 1 and 200 for most of the day. And we're just now a little bit under 31,000. I think we might still see some adjustments here in the next minute or two. But right now, the Dow is down 179 points at 30,996. However, the NASDAQ was up 12 points, 13,543. The S&P was down 11 at 3,841. 10-year yield was down 0.02 at 109%. And everything else was European Asian markets were pretty much in the red overnight. And so, you know, that's it. It's funny how quickly the news changes based on the administrations. And it really is amazing, you know, to see how everything changed so much. And I just saw this new headline where I think we're going to talk about stimulus today. But they're actually looking to draft a plan to give parents $3,000 per child. That's a lot. That it would draft a legislation that would direct the IRS to send recurring recurring? I don't know who under, you know, this has got to be, I'll have to look at this a little bit further. This is from the Washington Post. Not that that means anything, certainly in today's world. But to send recurring monthly payments to tens of millions of American families. Under one draft of the plan being discussed, the IRS would be tasked with depositing checks worth $300 every month per child younger than six, as well as $250 every month per child age 6 to 17. And, of course, that would amount to $3,600 over the course of the year for young children, as well as $3,000 a year for older children. And people want to know, do you need to own gold? Do I need to own gold? Well, right here, this will tell you that you really do. And Dave, I just can't even believe that the amounts of money that are being discussed, but of course, we're on the same venue that we're the same. They're going to just keep printing and giving money because that's the only thing that's keeping this system together and this economy together. Is the government printing money and handing it out? And we all know that there isn't anything in this world that is truly free. So someone's got to pay for it. So let's go ahead and go with the U.S. manufacturing activity. I guess this is good news. It surged to its highest level in nearly 14 years. But bottlenecks in the supply chain is caused by the pandemic are driving up prices and signaling a rise in inflation. Manufacturing and the housing market are helping to anchor an otherwise anemic economy right now. And, you know, we know that this pandemic is causing labor shortages at construction sites, factories, which could erode some of the strength in some of these in these two sectors. Data from the IHS market said its flash U.S. manufacturing PMI accelerated by a surprising, everybody's surprised, by 3.5% to a reading of 59.1 in the first half of the month. I'm sorry, but that's the highest reading since May of 2007.
Well, as you've said over the years, Melody, manufacturing certainly has declined in the U.S.
Well, economists had forecast the index would actually slip to 56.5 in early January. A reading above 50 indicates growth in manufacturing and accounts for 11.9% of the economy. Manufacturing is being supported by businesses rebuilding inventories and a shift in demand towards goods and services because of the pandemic. And measures of new orders received by factories raced to its highest level since September of 2014.
Well, interestingly, Melody, that's led to manufacturers hiring more workers in the first part of this month. The survey's factory employment index increased to about 55 from 52 in December. The pandemic's gumming up the supply chain. That's resulting in manufacturers paying more for materials, and they're passing on the higher production costs to consumers. The survey's gauge of prices received by factories jumped to its highest level since July 2008. And that mirrored other surveys that suggesting inflation is picking up and could remain elevated beyond the anticipated boost from the drop of weak readings in March and April. Now, the strength in manufacturing did help to lift business activity, too. The survey's flash composite PMI output index, which tracks the manufacturing and services sectors, rose to a reading of 58 the first half of January from 55.3 last month. But the survey's measure of services industries employment fell to a six-month low. So, if there was any kind of rebound going on, it's certainly limited to a few sectors, Melody, and despite the activity rising, employment still remains in a very, very challenging place.
Certainly is. And we can go over to the other side of the Atlantic, and you see that you have the European manufacturers. They're also struggling to get supplies. Their costs are surging. Testing, there's whatever optimism they might have that their economy will recover from the pandemic. I don't know how anything can recover from the pandemic when everything is shut down. How's that work?
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't. Are that many people buying things online when they're not working? Euro supplier delivery times tracked by IHS Market jumped in January by the most since the data started, since they started collecting back in 1997. The blockages contributed to the steepest rise in input cost in almost 3 years. And again, you have Germany, the region's biggest economy, reported limited freight capacity, shortage of containers. You know, so I don't... If you have supply chains that are stopped, how can the manufacturer? Well, I guess it's like this. I was always told, Dave, builders build because the banks expect them to build. That's how they get their loans, and they're expected to build, so they build, even though they don't have buyers, and even though they don't have, you know, people coming into those builders, they still have to build. That's why you see construction oftentimes going on when, you know, things are, you know, you can puzzle, you know, scratch your head and be a little puzzled. Maybe it's the same thing. Manufacturing has to keep building things, even though the supply chain, nobody wants the stuff, and you have the inventories that are building, but manufacturing is doing better, but it's not going anywhere. I don't know if that's true. It's just, you know.
Well, it is, at least to a certain extent. I mean, it does create a vicious cycle. I mean, there's normally a cycle in any event. It's just the cycle changes its appearance or speeds up or slows down depending, you know, on how, you know, the good old demand and supply regime. You know, you've got these supply chain disruptions, so, you know, you got big tankers with tons and tons of supply containers sitting outside of the ports. That's driving inventories up. It is a vicious cycle. It's just that the nature of what's been going on now is in turn changing the nature of how things work. I mean, the market survey, IHS's survey of European purchase managers, actually showed optimism about the next 12 months. In fact, it improved to a 3-year high for manufacturers. Go figure. While falling only slightly for service providers. Sentiment climbed to the highest on record among German manufacturers and improved even in the UK, where the nation's departure from the EU has just made trade disruption there, taking it to another level. Still, the latest strife has got to be unwelcome. I mean, just as the Eurozone slides into its second recession in a year, less than a year. The IHS market gauge of private sector activity there fell to 47.5. You know that a measure below 50 signals an industry in contraction. Again, services shrank at the second fastest rate since May. Chris Williamson, who's chief business economist there at IHS Markit, says a double-dip recession for the Eurozone economy is looking increasingly inevitable. Inevitable, Chris. I'd say it's upon them.
How about a triple dip?
Hey, well,
we're not talking ice cream cones here, folks.
Oh, well, that's where I was going.
Oh. Well, you know, again, you know, we not too long ago, everybody was kind of happy, thinking things were going along. The sentiment was increasing. And, you know, we're talking about manufacturing and home builders. They were never happier just two months ago. You know, buyer demand, driven by the pandemic-induced desire for larger new homes in the suburbs, had home builder sentiment at an all-time high. Now, the rising cost of getting homes built is making these builders just a little bit less optimistic. Yeah, you know, the builder confidence in the market for single-family homes fell 3% in January to 83, and of course, everything over 50, we know that. But 2 months ago, the index hit a record high of 90. In January 2019, before the pandemic struck, it was at 75. So now we're at 83. National Association of Home Builders Chair Chuck Falk said builders are grappling with supply-side constraints related to lumber and other material costs, a lack of affordable lots, and that's a fact, and labor shortages that delay delivery times and put upward pressure on home prices, Dave.
Yeah, and of the index's three components, current sales conditions dropped 2 points. Sales expectations for the next 6 months fell 2 points, and the weak spot, buyer traffic fell 5 points, all the way down to 68. Now, the home builder's chief economist, Bob Dietz, says that a shortage of buildable lots is making it difficult to meet strong demand. That, of course, is increasing the cost of the lots themselves, but rising material prices are far outpacing increases in home prices, which in turn, he says, is harming affordability. Now, on a nationwide basis, sentiment in the Northeast fell. It actually rose a little in the Midwest, fell slightly in the South. And the West, where it remained strongest, it dropped a point to 95. Angst all over the place, Melody.
Well, we continue to talk about companies that are having layoffs. And State Street Bank, remember they were another too big to fail. They're going to eliminate 1,200 jobs this year. Employees affected by the job costs cuts at the Boston-based financial services company will, and that's going to mostly include middle management. And the cuts would be around 3% of the company, which will allow State Street to save $120 million in 2021 and about twice as much in 2022. And you know what's funny, Dave? Is he said the CEO Ron Hanley said that a lot of these employees will find new jobs internally. So that means if they're planning on saving $120 million and most of these employees will find, that means they're going to have cuts in their pay, I would expect.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can stick around, but instead of getting your nice fat middle management salary position with benefits and so forth, we're going to start you out at minimum wage.
I mean, that's the stark reality in that big bad world.
So the extra money will help compensate for revenue that was lost in 2020. And their revenue declined about 4% last year as low interest rates generally made the financial sector less profitable. I don't know. You know, they're talking about blaming it on the low interest rates. But I thought low interest rates helped because they were able to do more. Hey, just
thinking. They do more in, they do more on the less profitable side of the company, I guess.
What works out is we're heading into the break. We'll finish up when we get back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseVoices.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. I'm glad it's Friday today. It's been a tough month, and but everybody's buying their gold and silver coins. You know, Dave, I had a great conversation with a gentleman today. There was a lot of predictions that, oh, we'd have the great reset on January, what, yesterday? The 21st, I think, was one of the days. And there was going to be a reset here and a reset there. 21st comes and goes. And it's like, well, why am I holding my gold? And it's like, anybody who gives dates, don't listen to them. Because they don't know. You can predict a trend, but it's very difficult to predict a date. Because my idea, when this comes undone, we'll wake up one morning to a whole brand new different world. All the promises of mining shares, well, I lost money in them. Because you're not buying gold. You don't buy mining shares in place of buying physical gold. You don't buy ETFs in place of buying physical gold and taking delivery of it. You know, mining shares, you're not buying gold. You're buying the corporation. You're buying the management team. You're not buying gold. We always used to say mining shares or gold mines is nothing more than a liar standing over a hole or something like that. You don't know what they're getting in the ground and their predictions and their tests. And I mean, that's what you're buying. And there's some very good mining companies out there. Some have done very well. But usually the ones that you're promised the biggest returns, and those are the ones people usually buy, don't turn out so well. And that's okay. But know this going in. You're not buying gold. And even though the reset didn't happen when it was supposed to, that doesn't mean the fundamentals for gold and silver has changed. Show me another investment that has the fundamentals like gold and silver. Gold is money. It's a measure of wealth. You can't change that. It's not going to change. It's been universally accepted, decreed, over time, thousands and thousands and thousands of years. It's money. It's the same thing as the color. I use this as an example. I probably have done it on this program before. It's like the color of blue. It's not going to be red tomorrow. It's there's just certain things, our measurements and everything else. It's there for good. I can't see any. I mean, am I going down the right path, Dave? In this explanation?
I think so.
Gold is money. It's not going to change.
I think our new mantras should be: gold is absolute.
It is. And the fiat dollar will continue to lose. I mean, my gosh, we're going to talk about jobs being lost. We're talking about $3,000 to $3,600 a month. Stimulus. State stimulus. governments, stimulus, federal government, stimulus. It's your dollar is going to continue, and particularly since it's going directly to the consumer, what are they going to do with it? They're going to turn it around and put it into the inflation. It's going to make those dollars even more, even less valuable. I can't even say that because they're not valuable. I mean, the whole system is corrupt. The whole system is not real. Bitcoin? Really? You really think Bitcoin is going to replace gold? Are you kidding me? You're going to measure your wealth? Or wealth is going to be measured by digits? Really? So, you know, yes, the fundamentals for gold and silver, I don't care if there was a reset or not. All the reasons that those people talked about for the resets that were going to happen are accurate. The problem is they predicted a date. And when dates come and go, people begin to question why they bought the product to begin with. So know the fundamentals of why you buy gold. Yes, Dave?
I'll say something, though, Melody, sort of in response to your gentleman's question. When the day of that reset should come, you won't be asking, why am I holding gold? You'll be grateful that you were, and the only thing you'll lament is that you didn't hold more.
Absolutely. And yes, you know, you know, people ask me, well, do you believe in the reset? Well, you know, I look at it differently. I believe our government has too much debt to be paid. It'll never be repaid. They will default on the debt somehow, some way. They will default. It will affect bonds. It will affect our monetary system. They will create a new monetary theory. You know, they already have one floating around and everything. But we're not going to know when it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. And yeah, that time could be a year. That matter of time might be 5 years. That matter of time could be tomorrow. So don't get caught up in dates. Get caught up in the information. Get caught up in the reasons you own gold and silver and what it does. And you have a fire insurance policy on your home. That just because you didn't have a fire this year, you don't cancel it. You continue to pay for it. So when you have that fire, you have insurance. You get repaid. Gold is your wealth insurance. That's why you buy it and you hold it. And we can see things that are developing that is moving us towards this default. Can anybody grasp what $1 trillion is? It has become meaningless. And that was a discussion that we had today, too. The money, trillions and $27 trillion. We can't even pay the interest. And everybody thinks this is just going along smoothly. So just vision what $1 trillion and then multiply that by 27. And I'll guarantee in the next 6 months, it'll be 30. So, Dave, I didn't mean to go on, but it's important that everybody knows that just because these things that have dates and people give you dates, ignore the dates. If that's what makes you buy something, and that's what they use it for, they use it as a selling tool, and sometimes those dates do make people buy. And I guess that's good, too, because if it wasn't for those dates, you wouldn't buy, maybe. But understand the fundamentals and the importance of owning gold and silver and what you're trying to protect, your retirements. It's just not buying things. You're there protecting your purchasing power, the wealth that you have created, that you worked so hard for. Give it a measure of wealth with gold. That's a great way to distribute onto your heirs. Unlike any other investment out there, there are loopholes. And you have to kind of ask yourself, why does the investment world, Wall Street, government, federal government, why do they allow these little loopholes in this investment? So anyway, because it's money. You know, that's what makes it different than any other investment out there also. So anyway, here we are back, 800-375-4188. TC Energy is going to eliminate 1,000 Keystone XL pipeline jobs, more than 1,000 construction jobs in the coming weeks, as we're going to see a halt on the Keystone XL oil pipeline. That was one of the first executive orders that was signed. And to me, it's the timing. You don't. So how is this going to make us for a better economy in the future? And KXL President Richard Pryor told employees, "I believe this will stifle innovation for a practical transition towards sustainable energy." With KXL now off the table, analysts say that TC Energy will need to find new ways to increase its earnings over the next 5 years, but may also benefit from no longer being in the crosshairs of environmental groups.
Yeah, it's interesting. Supporters of the pipeline, which would have shipped an estimated 800,000 plus barrels per day of this oil sands crude from Alberta, Canada, to Nebraska, they argued that the pipeline created several thousand good-paying jobs, and that pipelines, still remain the safest way to transport the fuel. The line was meant to come into full service in 2023. Construction was well underway in Canada, and the international border crossing had been completed. Now, in the U.S., TC Energy had started work on pump stations in each of the states the line would pass through, but various legal setbacks left it unable to do the dredging work under bodies of water on the U.S. side of the border. So, Pryor said the company will start to shut down construction at the pump station sites in the U.S., as well as the Canadian portion of the project. In the near future, which I took that to mean as over the next few months.
Hmm. Well, not so long ago, investment grade debt, you know, it was the darling of the fixed income world. Besides gold, highly rated bonds were a haven from the issuers most at risk, and as we've seen this year-long pandemic. Now the Fed backstop is in flux, and with spreads of three-year lows, high-grade yields may be a tougher sell. Investors are fretting about such things as leverage and an inflation surprise, with historic levels of duration risk in the benchmark-ish indexes. One notable rotation seems to be occurring into sectors that took the brunt of the pandemic's assault. Now, the recovery trade that's arisen from optimism about vaccines and their distribution has driven record weekly inflows into the iShares U.S. Fallen Angels USD bond ETFs. I don't know where we're going with this one, but it can't be good.
Well, you know, I mean, risky loans took their largest weekly hoard of cash since March of 2017 earlier this month. And that comes after a year when investors pulled money from funds in all but 12 weeks. And the appeal of a floating interest rate in a scenario of improving economic growth appears clear. But the current yield on senior loans is comparable with the high yield market, at least according to Too Big to Fail State Street Bank, which likes the fixed income market. But it says investors can probably capture more price appreciation on loans. So rallies in the high yield area have pushed the average price of the bonds above par, while senior loans, the longer term ones, are still trading below. Moreover, they're typically higher in the capital structure and can offer higher recovery rates as a result. So even though it's the bond market is in theory much less volatile than, say, the stock market as a rule, we've seen the last 3 years it's been crazy volatile as a whole. And so, even if you're looking at shorter term duration bonds, 1, 3, 5 years, there's still a lot of risk now inherent in them, and the farther out you go, the more volatility you're going to see. I mean, just look at the 10-year yield over the last month, the roller coaster ride that's been on, and of course now they're on their way. It looks like they're trending back down again, Melody. So I don't know that the risk off crowd is going to find much relief. It just give in, people. Give in. Stop resisting the precious metals. I don't want to sound like a broken record.
Well, the funny thing about bonds is because everybody thinks they're guaranteed. That's the impression from that governments, and they're not. They're not. But everybody thinks it's a safe bet. But it isn't.
There's
so
a huge secondary market for treasuries and other governmental agencies, as well as corporate bonds. And I think the same thing that Melody just talked about in terms of governmental debt eventually defaulting. And I think we've got to be surprised that, even at historic, maybe not, because of the historic low interest rates, we just see the level of corporate debt rising to historic levels. If suddenly rates were to go up, and they don't have to go up by a whole lot for the interest payments on this huge pile of corporate debt to have an impact on their ability to pay. I mean, most of the bigger companies are going to have enough cash to move around to do that. But, with big companies now hell-bent, it appears, on buying back shares of stock, that's going to go away if they suddenly have to pay more interest on their debt outstanding, Melody.
Hey, we're heading into the second break of the day. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm your host for this third and final segment, Dave Allen. Melody off into the business paperwork sunset, trying to take care of some clients before we head into the weekend. Now, Wall Street, Washington, and Silicon Valley are swimming in cash and prosperity. 2020 couldn't have gone any better for the country's elites. The vast majority of Americans, on the other hand, well, they've been forced into financial, physical, and emotional pain, and in some cases, ruin. We've talked about how many millions are on the verge of being evicted, how many have children who are growing hungry. 2020 served as the year that government mandates revealed unprecedented wealth inequality and created issues far more dangerous than COVID-19 in the long run. The unintended consequences of fighting the coronavirus with the power of government are now on display for the world to see. Interesting survey just released by Morning Consult has revealed part of the extent of the devastation caused by pandemic lockdowns and other wealth and health destroying restrictions. The remote work economy is functioning beautifully for people who have already established themselves with healthy income streams. For those still struggling to obtain the American dream, however, or to hold on to it, well, not so much. Americans who are already earning six-figure salaries have reported an increase in income for 2020, while those making between $50,000 and $100,000 reported a drop in income. And tragically, respondents earning under $50,000 have been absolutely hammered by the pandemic, reporting by far the largest income drop among fellow Americans. Now, the survey also shows the less fortunate faced a variety of health consequences in 2020, registering a decline in both physical and mental health, in addition to a declining job security and overall quality of life. We talked about happiness and the search for happiness the other day's program. Meanwhile, the world's billionaires have been swimming in cash. Several of the world's richest people, all of them men, saw their net worths increase multiple times over the course of last year. And the policy response has created a windfall for these titans of American and global industry. Let me just give you a handful of the wealthiest and what's happened. Elon Musk at the top of the heap went from $24.6 billion in wealth to $190 billion as of January 10th. That's up from March of last year. Jeff Bezos, at number two, went from $113 billion to $186. You have Bill Gates at number four, went from $98 to $122. Mark Zuckerberg, $55 billion to $98. Even Warren Buffett, $68 billion to roughly $89. And so on and so on. Now, the tremendous wealth gap once again shows that the stock market is far from a good indicator of overall prosperity in America. Only 9% of Americans earn six-figure salaries. They're able to make their money work in the stock market and invest it in other profitable avenues. On the other hand, those at the other end who are struggling need to keep their depreciating zero interest savings on hand just to pay the bills and other expenses. We live in interesting times, ladies and gentlemen. Our latest blog, which will come out right after today's program, is about a possible day of reckoning for Wall Street. Listeners can subscribe to our free weekly blogs and newsletters at dgscoins.com, or you can read them on our Facebook page, the @DGScoins. The title of today's blog is The Man Who Knows Too Much. Who is that guy? A guy by the name of Gary Gensler. He's Joe Biden's pick to chair the Securities and Exchange Commission. Move that could and probably should perk up Americans looking for appointees willing to take on big business, because there are very few of them. Gensler's become best known in regulatory circles for imposing sweeping rules on banks as the chair of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission after the Great Recession. In that role, he rattled the nation's mega banks to a certain extent. Those banks lobbied against his efforts and sued to stop him. They'll probably be disappointed that he's on the way back to oversee their trading operations. In fact, they're angry and they're scared. Gensler, who's now a professor at MIT in Boston and not in some cushy Wall Street finance job, as part of the revolving door, led the Biden transition's review of financial regulatory agencies, including the SEC and the Fed. And when he headed the CFTC, he spearheaded efforts to impose a plethora of rules on the market for financial derivatives known as swaps. Recall, swaps, form of CMOs, collateralized mortgage obligations, and others, fueled the 2008 banking crisis when they were traded virtually without any regulation. Now, Gensler's initial appointment to the CFTC was initially opposed by the likes of Bernie Sanders and other so-called progressives, mainly because of his early career at too-big-to-fail Goldman Sachs. Up leaving as one of the government's most consequential regulators following the financial meltdown. Now, if confirmed, Gensler will take the helm of a much larger agency that has an even bigger influence on the economy through its regulation of the stock market and private securities. You got Senate Democrats like Sherrod Brown of Ohio, who plan to press the SEC to draft a number of new rules, including mandatory disclosures of political spending. Earlier in the week, Senator Brown, who will lead the SEC oversight as chair of the Senate Banking Committee, said he had spoken with Biden's potential SEC nominees, including Gensler. Under Biden, Brown said he expects there will be a more pro-consumer attitude and a more antagonistic approach to Wall Street at financial regulatory agencies. Well, we'll see. And again, Wall Street's reportedly fuming over Gensler's appointment. The SEC happens to oversee Wall Street's infamous dark pools, which our friends the Martins of Wall Street on Parade have challenged as potentially illegal behavior. Gensler had also previously served as a senior advisor to Senator Paul Sarbanes in writing the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. That was sort of historic legislation in its own right prior to Dodd-Frank in 2010. Now, Sarbanes-Oxley imposed criminal penalties, including, yes, prison time, in theory, if CEOs and CFOs knowingly signed off on financial statements they knew to be false. Wall Street's never forgiven Gensler for that, despite the woeful fact that not one too-big-to-fail bank executive has seen time behind prison bars for their part in the Great Recession or subsequent crimes. Now, Gensler's chairing of the SEC would bring an end to a seven-year run of Wall Street lawyers running the SEC under both Presidents Obama and Trump. And Wall Street also dislikes Gensler because he has an institutional command of some of the biggest risks, and he likes to speak truth to power before investigative bodies and to the public in general. You know, unfortunately, though, Gensler's going to find out that the big boys on Wall Street, you know, particularly J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup, have learned to game the intent of laws like Dodd-Frank, especially when it comes to derivatives. You know, that market's as dubious as ever. The majority of all derivatives having failed to move to central clearing as Dodd-Frank envisioned, in fact required. And the scariest part of what Gensler's talked about in the past is still going on today. Derivative risks haven't been reined in. Wall Street banks are still paying rating agencies for ratings. Risk is still concentrated among a handful of big banks. And shaky off-balance sheet accounting still poses incredible risks to some of the largest banks, the so-called globally important systemic banks, the G-SIBs. We'll just call them the too big to fails. And as for the potential of another liquidity run like we had in September, well, none of the bank regulators currently want to provide any transparency to the American people as to exactly what happened. Like Pam and Russ Martin's at Wall Street on Parade believe, Gensler's confirmation hearing should be fun to watch. There are no doubt going to be a number of members on that committee who are receiving large campaign contributions from the likes of Koch Industries and the big banks that don't want to see market regulations or their hands cuffed any more tightly. Will Gensler's appointment finally result in some meaningful watchdogginess in Washington on behalf of taxpayers? We'll know soon enough, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned. Okay, so as Biden begins his term as 46th president, with a daunting list of foreign policy changes, the new administration has to overcome skepticism now about America's ability to deal with a number of tests around the world, and not the least of which is the rise of China as a superpower, the spread of nuclear weapons again, especially if some treaties with Russia aren't renegotiated, and generally patching up the transatlantic alliance with our longtime partners in Europe. Just last month, the European Union and China pushed a new economic agreement over the line. The actual terms of that China investment agreement remain unclear, but the broad outline, simple enough, represents a deeper trading relationship based on common and apparently enforceable standards. Now, according to the EU, the trade deal ties Beijing to a new values-based investment relationship. Careful when you hear values-based. That will supposedly protect labor and environmental standards and help root China in the rules-based global order. Surprisingly, Washington sees the deal through different lenses. The EU went forward with the deal despite a very public plea from the incoming administration to hold fire and wait. 4 years of Europe bashing by the previous administration, it seems, had hardened European hearts in favor of a pointed display of strategic autonomy. Autonomy from whom or what, you might ask? appears the United States right now is the only answer. Is Europe's refusal to wait until this week's transfer of power an indication of the extent to which the world has changed since Biden was last in government just over 4 years ago? Well, today's Europe apparently is not prepared to consult the U.S. before signing such an important agreement. And it's rejecting the very notion it should have to. It's because the U.S. defends Europe doesn't mean the kind of Brezhnev doctrine of obedience is in place, according to the EU. In one sense, then, in that, Biden's Europe problem is obvious. The continent that the U.S. fought two wars to free, paid to rebuild, and has spent 75 years protecting at great, uneven, and continuing cost, is now striking deals behind its back with its main strategic rival. Experts are saying the EU-China deal masks a more profound problem for Biden, however, and it's not European strength, but European weakness. While the U.S. clearly has significant problems to overcome, they likely won't overshadow some of the challenges facing Europe, which may prove in time to be a lot more serious than those here in America. And you know what? That music means it's the end of the program. Melody will be back Monday, hopefully, with Pastor Butch Paul. Thanks to our engineer Todd for producing today's and all of our programs. Look, and if you're a winner in tonight's 970 million Mega Millions lottery drawing, we'll have phone lines open over the weekend to begin your planning financial future. Calls at 1-800-375-4188.